Welcome to SciTech Culture with Steve Kern and Ben Warner, where we examine science, technology and culture in the 21st century. Visit our website at scitechculture.com.
Steve, I tell you what, I mean, we've been off for a couple of weeks or whatever, and you step away for even a week and you get all sorts of dramatic events happening. And you know, if you'd been living under a rock or whatever, I'm sure we're not telling you anything that hasn't already been blasted out on the airwaves everywhere, is that Trump was found guilty in the so-called hush money case that was brought forward in the state of New York. Obviously, this has sent shockwaves around the world in terms of its news and gravity and whatnot. Obviously, as a matter of the record, I guess, it's the first convicted ex-president that the US has had. Obviously, before we get into that, it's not as if, I guess this is a new thing for the US in the sense that, just as a matter of practicalities, in the sense that this is the first time they've, even though they've probably had other officials, charged and found guilty of other things, they haven't actually had an ex-president come up for this. And there's, obviously other countries have had these instances where charges have been brought against ex-leaders before, but it's the first time for the US. So, if it had happened at any other time too, it would still be shocking or whatever. But then there would, whatever you would call it, an appropriate response, the way people would galvanize behind it, whatever. But it does raise the question of where is the US right now, really? Because it's obviously, there's much has been said about how polarized it is. There's no arguing against the fact that it's still not in the thick of that. Will this conviction and guilty verdict just flame the fire of Trump's base? That's like a rhetorical question almost, because I think everyone knows the answer to that one. It's going to galvanize obviously anyone that was against Trump. The thing that maybe really gets to me though, and obviously I'm absolutely no fan of Trump at all. And I can potentially foresee that it's not as if he's not gangster-like anyway. But that even the fact that it's even being questioned again, is this all legitimate, etc. They're really in an insane place right now, the US, as far as all that's concerned. Because I would have thought that, shouldn't this sort of stuff be fairly straightforward?
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a 4-year break from Trump, but it looks like he's now back every week for the next 5 years. Where does one begin? It is a very strange time, no less, because I think this probably puts the Trump campaign on track all the way to the election now. Maybe it's counterintuitive. Maybe it depends which side you're on. Who knows? But by any measure, the case against him, even though he's been found guilty, you might say is a flimsy connection of events that lead to a felony. And he is now a convicted felon. And there's nothing to stop him running. So...
They're just picking up on that, and this talks to some of the insanity of it, because it's like there's not a way to bring common sense to the table here, because there are three stipulations or requirements for becoming president. One was it has to be over 35, has to be a U.S. citizen.
Has to be born in the U.S.
Born in the U.S., sorry, yep. And there was I think there was a third one as well. But Trump satisfies all three. I can't remember what the third one was, but he satisfies all three. It doesn't say anywhere that if he's a convicted felon, he can't run. And you raise there's this bizarre universe now that could exist where, what, is he going to be behind bars calling the shots? Is he going to be under house arrest in the Oval Office?
He'll pardon himself as soon as he becomes president. I mean, honestly, we say this a lot, but you couldn't make this stuff up.
But in this case, he can't because of the state charges in this case. So, that, again, it raises the question, is he going to be serving time while serving the office and doing his time serving the office? It's like, I don't know. I just, it's spinning, it's head spinning in that respect. That's why I would hope, I don't, if it, it's kind of makes the outcome of what will happen this year almost seem like it, they stumbled into it or it's accidental, one way or the other, whether they, you know, they all collectively get behind Biden because they don't want Trump. I would hope that that would be the reason not to get him in again for not just potentially this, but for a whole host of other reasons. But it could either be that or Trump does get in because things like this have stoked the flames to get, you know, the individual liberties and all that, that all that question comes up. But it almost seems like that regardless of one way or the other, there isn't like that intent to get to one of those outcomes. It's like they'll end up stumbling into one of them.
Oh, I agree. Now, I'm not predicting who will win the US election, but what I will predict is Trump now is guaranteed his 75 million votes again, whatever he got last time. So what this has done is taken away a need for Trump to win the election, and it's only the Democrats' election to lose. So if the Democrats can't attract the same base as the last election, Trump will win. So I don't know that Trump will lose any votes over this. I guess the polls will show us in the coming months. But it'll come down to, can the Democrats mobilize the same number of voters as they did at the last election? Because this will galvanize every single Trump supporter to come out and support him again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just moving on to our next topic, which is sort of in the similar vein because it's got to do with the spreading of misinformation online. Because
this is how Trump Corporation works.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I read this article on Science Alert about how, you know, there's one action that's made significant, has made a significant impact on how misinformation spreads online. I don't know if I really am totally behind the idea, but the idea being that, alternative facts, misleading information, whatever you want to call it, that ends up on mainstream media outlets that are not fact checked, and that's what the driver is for people accepting, the whatever is presented to them. I don't doubt that that's a contributing factor, but I would have thought that there'd be a whole lot more going on there, like in terms of social media feeds and whatever else that would be having that kind of an impact. I thought that I only highlighted this article because when I read it, I thought, hang on, there's a little bit more going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What they've done is they've measured the technical aspect. And I mean, look, the reality is we've known this stuff for years. People believe what they want to believe, even in the presence of facts. You know, if you want to believe it, you can believe it. And I think what this points to, though, is that if you are doubtful and you see an article that's doubtful, then, you know, that will resonate with you more than something that is factual but doesn't resonate with you. And the bit I totally agree with you that's being left out here is the fact that once you look at one doubtful article, the algorithm's going to serve you up another doubtful article, and that's going to reinforce your doubt. And then by the time you've looked at your second doubtful article, you'll get a third, fourth, fifth, sixth. In fact, you'll get one every day, courtesy of the algorithm. And it won't be long before you're got so much doubt, there's no way you're going to do anything except believe in doubt rather than believe in fact. And I think that's the way it works, and that's how all of this works. If you want to believe Trump's innocent and there's a conspiracy against him, it's not hard to find articles that will reinforce that view.
Absolutely. All right, let's turn our attention to our last topic and something different and perhaps a bit more lighter and fun compared to what we were just talking about. Obviously, Microsoft just had their Surface event a couple of weeks ago. This was after our not long after our last episode, so it's our first chance to talk about it. I've actually been excited by this in the sense that I think I've even said before that I've wanted to see an alternative to you know, the M series chips and in the MacBooks over on the PC side. Although these are announcements, obviously. I have no reason to doubt that these particular chips combined with the tech that they've put, the hardware that they've got there is probably going to measure up and actually be the first genuine ARM-based Windows series of devices, which can actually genuinely compete with the MacBooks. It's still... curious, you know, that they felt the need to have to compare themselves to the M3 line of MacBook Airs every 5 seconds in the presentation. I didn't think they needed to do that because I thought I would have thought that it would have been enough for them to just say that, you know, there are, you know, obviously I'm in the Apple ecosystem and I've got, you know, Apple hardware, but I do still have an appreciation for Windows hardware and Windows as a ecosystem as well. So why can't Windows enthusiasts have an option that's equivalent to, say, a MacBook? I'm all for that. I think that's a great thing if that happens, because obviously it'll, I would think, also spur on Apple to do better as well, because if you know, they never want to be seen to be behind. So it's good for them, but I also think it's just good to have an alternative device that has the same capabilities and performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I thought the most interesting thing was it's all Snapdragon. There's not an Intel in sight. I thought that for me was really interesting and very telling. Obviously, Intel is trying to create ARM chips, but you know, they're stuck with what was the best form of processing, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and now it's not, it doesn't meet needs. And it's interesting because a lot was made of the speed of the new Snapdragon chips which they've got in the Surface range, but you know, if you went for pure speed, arguably that the Intel architecture is faster or can do heavier processing more quickly. But it goes to show that really the way that we're using our devices these days don't require heavy crunching. We require, you know, cooler running chips that are able to process multiple tasks more quickly, but aren't necessarily real sort of processor crunching sort of tasks. So it's interesting to see this shift. I completely have no understanding of what quicker than Apple means. Like, I mean, I'll say it, I've got an M1 chip in the MacBook Pro I'm using. That's as fast as anything I've ever used. And I don't know how it could be faster, because I wouldn't even see it if it was faster. So, you know, I don't understand what that part of it is. However, it is exciting, just like you said, Ben, to see a range of new products that are window native and, you know, give the functionality and a lot of the features that we appreciate, you know, on the Apple ecosystem into a Windows and into the Surface environment. So that's great.
Absolutely. And I guess finally, we have to touch on the AI elephant in the room here, because obviously it had to be part of the presentation.
What is it, Ben? And what is this AI that they speak of?
Well, apparently they've branded it as is it Copilot plus PC? Because obviously Copilot is going to be their engine for all the AI stuff. Another word for assistant. I mean, it's a nice fancy word. You know, you've got your Copilot next to you, you know, helping you out and whatever.
What happened to the paperclip?
Yeah, Clippy or whatever it was in Office.
What happened to the paperclip? He was helpful.
That's right. But it just, I mean, I know we were talking about it before we got on today, but to me, it's not just Microsoft, obviously. They did it in this presentation, but I remember this from the Google presentation that happened this year, and I've no doubt that when we get around to talking about Apple's announcements in a couple of weeks' time, when they do their stuff, they're really just rolling out features. That's essentially what they're doing, but they're branding them as AI, and they're getting an extra media cycle out of it, or an enhanced media cycle out of it, than they otherwise would if it was just a feature.
Oh, yeah. Well, I agree that, you know, with you on that one. And I'm glad you explained to me before the show that, you know, instead of using a drop down menu, I guess what? I speak to my laptop and it will take me to the last document I opened.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
Well, that's wow. I'm blown away.
Absolutely. But that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not that these things aren't great. I mean, you know, using an equivalent of whatever ChatGPT is built into Windows, you know, obviously Microsoft has to dress it up in a way that suits Windows and the way they want it to look and everything. But having that functionality is useful. And I've used ChatGPT to do some things. It's amazing how good it is at spitting out things that can actually be useful, even though you probably have to go in and tweak it afterwards to make sure that it's working properly. But as a side note, I typed in there one day, write me a limerick about introverts, and it actually came up with a rather fun, really clever limerick. But anyway, I digress. So it's not as if that any of that's useful, but I don't. It's just a little bit. Do you think people can see through this whole thing about you got some good features there, but is it AI? That's
well,
the thing.
And this is the question. I also wonder, does it just stay within your system, or is it fed back? So when it says it knows your preferences, who exactly knows your preferences? If it knows everything you've browsed and is, you know, thinking about what you like browsing, what is that doing in the background? I just wonder.
Well, I think you're touching on one of the features that they announced, which was, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it was remembering what you were doing in a more real-time way, as opposed to doing some sort of version history or whatever. And obviously, you start to think about, all right, well, then it's capturing everything I'm doing, privacy out the window, whatever. And it'll be interesting to see if how Apple responds to that too, because obviously Apple's version of AI is going to have, we're concerned about users' privacy. So how's that going to work?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, that side of it. But on a more positive note, I like the idea that they're incorporating it now with some of the creative products. Once again, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of information on what that meant, but maybe if you have a, you know, I don't know, a favorite filter series or something like that for your videos or images that you're creating, maybe it, you know, you won't have to go to a drop down menu to find what you like, or do your presets or something. Maybe it'll just know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Steve, we might wrap it up there. Maybe I should add a Surface laptop to my collection just for the fun of it, just to see how it goes. Maybe I should try finding a way to test one, just to see if it really is faster than an M3 MacBook Air.
I was going to say, could it be an alternative to the iPad Pro?
Well, you'd argue maybe it's better value for money considering what you're doing with it, if you're calling it a pro device.
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't know. That's a little test for you to do.
Absolutely. All right. So that's it for this week's episode. We'll catch you next time.